Hey guys, quick note before today's show. My guest is Daniel Jeremiah, and we spend most of this episode previewing games, Cardinals, Ravens, Vikings, Panthers, Browns, Jets. But we also did a 10-minute segment yesterday morning on Antonio Brown's football fit with the Patriots. But given the news from yesterday that Antonio Brown has been accused of rape and sexual assault, I decided to cut that discussion from the show. So if it feels a little abrupt getting into the games, that's why. In any case, I hope you enjoy the rest of the episode. Hello. Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where when one of the hosts hears the phrase move the sticks, he thinks it's time to play fetch. Speaking of moving the sticks, I am so excited about today's guest. That is the name of his podcast. If you don't already subscribe, you should. He is a former NFL scout for the Ravens, the Browns, the Eagles. He's an analyst at the NFL Network. He is all over the draft. He does color for the Chargers. And he also might be the nicest guy in NFL media. Daniel Jeremiah, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, Mina, I could not be more pumped to be with you and Lenny. You know, I've been big fans of both yours for a very long time, and for all the negative side of social media, which we all know there's plenty. We've been able to have a real cool friendship just from social media, and I've got several people like that where I think social media can get a bad rap at times, but it's a great way to connect with people that you respect.
Yeah, when you're nice, like you, it is. And you're so nice, by the way. When I kind of announced or whatever, told people that I was doing color for the Rams preseason, Daniel congratulating me without telling me that he had done color for the Rams, and I'm a dummy and didn't even know, and you didn't even mention it because you're so humble.
No, look, it was fun. Anytime you get to work with Andrew Siciliano, who's the best and such a great guy, I had great experience there doing that, and then the Chargers thing came along, so I was able to get that opportunity. But they're great people there with the Rams, and I knew as hard as you work and the insight that you bring and your personality, it was going to be a great fit. So I was pumped to see you get that opportunity, and even more pumped to see you nail it when you did. So it was really cool.
Going from the Rams to the Chargers, really, you know, that LA rivalry. What they played last year, what is the name for it? Like the Battle for LA? They came up with some kind of name.
Yeah,
I'm not sure it's like
it was
that
not
heated.
Great, it was
here.
Not a, no, it's not a great slogan. It was like, I think Battle for LA year one, and then I think it kind of went away and nobody really talked about it anymore. the funny thing was last year when they played, because if you think about it, like JB, who does the radio for the Rams, and then Maurice Jones-Drew, who, you know, I'm around all the time at NFL Network, and then it's me and Matt Money Smith doing the Chargers. So we all know each other really well. And so before that game, we took a picture. I think Maurice might have taken it. And I'm sure he posted it. But we did kind of like a fake fight in the press box before the game. The real battle for LA was taking place up in the broadcast booth.
Oh yeah, like an Anchorman style. You guys coming up with your mace and your knives. You know what they need a name like, the soccer teams here, the Galaxy and the FC. I don't know if you know this. When they play, they call it El Trafico, which is a play on, El Clasico, right? The Europeans. I don't know. I know soccer, but it's
very
a little
catchy.
More clever.
Very well done. Yeah. We don't have the Battle for LA thing didn't work. It was no good.
It's weird because they're both really good teams, but look, you know, speaking of good teams and good games, as always during the NFL season, I've picked a few that I want to talk about coming off of what I think was a really excellent and exciting week one. The first game that I want to talk to you about, I'm especially excited to talk about it now coming after this weekend because honestly it was, you know, two of the more exciting stories we've had coming off of a week one in a while, and that game is Cardinals-Ravens. And just two quarterbacks that I'm so fascinated by, and I think sort of changed perceptions a bit coming off the first week, certainly with Lamar. I want to talk to you about Kyler first, though, because I thought this was a fascinating week one performance from him. And really, obviously, as everyone knows, it was a tale of three quarters, right? And then in the end, and I guess in the fourth quarter, let's see, do I have his statistics? He was unbelievable, whatever. You don't need the numbers. He was really good. And I want to ask you, Daniel, like, do you think that it was a matter of sort of the first half, first three quarters of this game, both Kyler and Cliff coming out with a game plan and sort of meeting a harsh reality in NFL defenses? The Lions defense, I don't think is one of the better units in the NFL, but it felt like they were unprepared for, I don't know, just sort of the simple reality of man coverage in a four-man rush that got home against a bad offensive line.
Yeah, it was fun to watch the video because two things. Number one, you're going to see what is Cliff's offense look like, what's he going to do, and also how the teams are going to play it. And, you know, having done the preseason game there early in the year and talked to a bunch of the people there, I mean, it was like, look, we're going to live in 10 personnel. We're going to be four wide, and then we're going to do a bunch of empty. And then you go watch the preseason in there and heavy personnel so much. I'm like, this is such a throwaway preseason. Like, you're not going to get anything out of this watching this Cardinals team. It's not the way they're going to play. And then it was how our team's going to react and play them. So when you look at the numbers and have a chance to go through, watch the tape and go back and look at the numbers, there are 58 dropbacks. And 50 of those snaps, the Detroit Lions rushed four or fewer. So that was the way they chose to play it. Now, early on, Detroit was able to bat down. I think I counted three or four where they got their hands up and got balls down. They decided they were just going to try and play coverage. And it took Cliff and Kyler just a minute to get comfortable with that and try and sort through that and figure that out. The challenge for him and for Cliff, in my opinion, is when you look at the way this offense is geared and the way it's set up and look at the success that they've had in this, or Kyler had in this offense at Oklahoma. Ideally, you know, if you want to be a great team that runs this offense, you need a great offensive line, great receivers. If you want to be a team that's very good, very competitive, you need one or the other. I don't think the Cardinals have either. I really don't. I don't think they're good up front on the offensive line. And they're going to do so much 3-by-1 formation, which is going to give you, if you have a stud in college, you do 3-by-1, you put your stud soloed up, and you just wear that corner out. And Larry, you know, had a good game, but Larry's not what he was. Keyshawn Johnson's a good young player, but he's not anybody that you have to game plan around. We're going to have to wait until they get those guys to see this thing really explode, or they're going to have to get really good up front on the offensive line to take advantage of the space they're going to have in the run game. So it's going to be interesting to watch how it all unfolds. I do think they found their success late in the game, though, with a lot of empty. When you go in the fourth quarter into overtime, they spent a bunch of time in empty. If they're only going to rush four, let's get five guys out and let's get them out right now. And I thought that was kind of the adjustment they made, whereas I thought the Lions would adjust and maybe start sending some pressure. They blitzed eight times. Kyler was 4 of 8, 40 yards and a pick and a sack. So at some point in time, I waited for that adjustment to come, and it didn't happen.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think you saw both coach and quarterback sort of evolve a bit over the course of the game, right? I mean, Kyler looked more comfortable in the pocket as well, I thought, in the fourth quarter and at the end there. And as you just mentioned, Cliff made some adjustments too, going into hurry up. Kyler, I think, got better at identifying pressure. But I also worry, Daniel, that it was really just like the success they had later on was equally predicated on the Lions defense just looking gassed, right? And with Snacks Harrison, who was so great at the beginning, not really getting on the field as much as they went into hurry up. And I look at this matchup with the Ravens defense that I think they're better than the Lions defense. They do have injuries coming out of last week in that secondary. Jimmy Smith, I don't know how serious it is, sprained his knee or something like that. And then they're already down their nickel. But, you know, I could see that unit having more success against the Cardinals late in the game. And I just don't think it's encouraging to see Kyler make adjustments and sort of learn how to, you know, stop trying to, like, the windows weren't there like they were in college, that kind of thing. But this team just doesn't have the talent on offense. You know, I think we talk about the adjustments Cliff's going to make. He's going to have to recognize that because, yeah, they just don't have the receivers. They don't have the offensive line, I think, to compete.
Yeah, and even with Jimmy Smith and his injury, it's still a very deep and loaded secondary for the Baltimore Ravens. So they'll get up in the face and they'll challenge wide receivers because there's nobody that scares you. Like, there's nobody that you go up and say, uh-oh, you know, we're going to single this guy up and we're going to get up in his face and this could really end badly. They just don't have that personnel at this point in time. So that's going to, I think, be more of a challenge. And I think you'll see teams, if they are going to rush four, I think you'll see more games, you know, doing more games up front. I thought the Lions were their pass rush was just stale at the end of the game. They're rushing four. There wasn't a lot of excitement, not a lot of games. So I think the Ravens will be more attacking. I think they'll get up in them, and I think that they'll send some more bodies. You won't see a situation where 50 of 58 snaps, they only rush four from the Ravens. I think they'll bring some extra bodies and try and speed Kyler up. Because in the thing I loved about Kyler, he was very quiet and very calm. When he had some protection back there, man, he put his feet in the ground and he looked very comfortable and the ball comes out. It is beautiful to watch him throw the ball. He can sling it. So I don't think this team's going to be very good because of the personnel around him. But I am, after watching one game and watching the adjustments he made and how comfortable he looked, I think Kyler Murray's going to be a very good quarterback in this league.
I love his deep ball. Just the touch on it. It's so effortless. Beautiful. And you see what you saw in college, right, with that. But yeah, with the, you know, you mentioned again the Lions and the rush. Kyler was pressured like 10% of the time in the fourth quarter. And I just don't think that's going to happen against Baltimore. You talk about playing games. No one's better at that than Wink Martindale. And by the way, that was a pass rush. That was, you know, a bit of an area of concern for this Baltimore team after losing, so much of their production in the offseason. But Matt Judon looked great. I thought Patrick Nwosor, am I saying his right name? The Peanut.
He's one of the better young linebackers in the NFL. People don't
he's good.
Him. He's a really good
yeah.
player.
Yeah. In rewatching this, I was like, oh, man, he really flashed to me both in coverage and getting to the passer. But I just also think Kyler's going to be he's going to be playing from behind because I don't – well, I will say I was pleasantly surprised by the – pass rush production of the combined, 70 years old Terrell Suggs and Chandler. I mean, but it was better than I thought. I did not think, I mean, what a week for old pass rushers between him and Wake. But anyway, setting that aside, the rest of that defense is really, really bad. And boy, is this Ravens offense fun. So I guess, you know, do you want to throw any cold water on what we saw in week, like what excited you about Lamar Jackson's performance in week one and what made you think, okay, this is just the Dolphins?
Yeah, I mean, look, I made a joke and some Dolphins fans got mad at me, but I said, you know, everybody was curious to see what the Ravens college offense was going to look like and we forgot they were playing a high school defense. And the Dolphins fans did not care for that. But look, it's a bad team. If they're trying to tank, they're doing a tremendous job. They're off to a great start. But Lamar, the stuff that excited me wasn't the big highlights, wasn't the deep balls over the top to Hollywood Brown. The thing that excited me was I saw progress with him outside the numbers, which was an area when you watched him at Louisville, he struggled. You go back and watch him in his pro day. He's not comfortable pushing the ball outside, and the nose of the ball goes down, he loses tremendous accuracy or it'll sail on him. So just him completing some nice, easy, smooth, quick outs. There was a deeper out that he hit. Seeing that improvement outside the numbers, it's not going to be the highlight plays, the splash plays. That's just what he has to do. I know he can throw over routes to tight ends. I know even throwing over the top on post is something he's been comfortable with. He needed to improve on that stuff outside the numbers, and he did. Was very encouraging, but there were so many blown coverages. They played a lot of cover zero and just went man to man. And that's why what frustrated me with this Ravens team last year, even though they go to the playoffs and had some success, I hate it when you are so good running the ball and you don't pay that off with big plays in the passing game. Like run. Okay. When you're going to throw, like this is not going to be an 8-yard game. There should be some 50 and 60 yard games with as many bodies or in there to try and stop the run game. They couldn't pay that off. And now with Hollywood Brown, they've got some speed, and Boykin's going to be one of those guys too, where they're going to be able to pay off all that running with some big chunk plays in the pass game.
Were you at Lamar's pro day, Daniel?
I covered it from the studio.
Okay. Cause I was there, and yes, I always feel bad because I love him. I love watching him play, and it's so electric, and he's Michael Vick 2.0, and it gets me excited. But from that pro day, what I walked away with was the only real negative was that this kid can't throw outs, you know, and, it's something that you saw during his rookie season. So like you, I was very encouraged by the limited, it wasn't a lot, right? They mostly just, you know, hit those seam routes, which are always, he's very good up the seam, is why he's so deadly with Mark Andrews. By the way, if you thought TJ Hockenson did work on this Cardinals defense, good Lord, here comes Mark Andrews. But all that said, yeah, they might not need to throw outs on these guys, but yeah, it was really, really promising because you talk about the payoff because he's so electric as a runner, because they always, he doesn't even have to keep it, you know, because he has to be accounted for on every play, setting aside just him, Mark Ingram looked awesome as well. Those throws are always there. They are there. Yeah, and he doesn't even have to be 85%.
I got a lot of people that thought I was crazy because I said early on in the offseason that Mark Ingram's going to lead the NFL in rushing. And people,
he's
oh,
so good.
Come on, stop. And I'm like, he is going to lead the NFL in rushing. Go back and look with CJ2K's 2,000-yard season with the Titans. A lot of that, not all of it, obviously he's a great player, a lot of that is because of Vince Young's presence. You have to account for him on the backside. So when you have to take one less body to stop the running game because you're worried about the quarterback, it's going to make things easier. So you've got a good offensive line. You can always hold the backside in because of Lamar Jackson's mere presence. Mark Ingram is going to have a monster year in this offense.
Mm-hmm. Marshawn Lynch, I always use the example. Everyone always talks about how he carried Russell Wilson, and it drives me crazy because you wonder why Marshawn Lynch suddenly had a career renaissance when he goes to Seattle. And oh, by the way, in 2012, they are like, they're running the read option every other play. It's because of the phenomena you're describing. But yes, my point is like, so he was awesome this week. Yes, it was against the high school defense, and you know, he's not going to complete 85% of his passes, but he doesn't have to, right? Like, he only has to like hit those open routes and be solid. And I think what was so promising to me, Daniel, it's not just that he hit them, but he hit them in stride. Like, those were pretty throws, right? Like, yes,
no doubt.
They got busted, they were perfect.
It was impressive. And that's the thing. He doesn't need to hit threes. He just needs to make layups. And if he can make layups in this offense, which is going to give him a lot of layups because of how committed they are to the run game, that's all he has to do. And they're going to be a very dangerous team. The problem was late in the year, and I was there and saw it firsthand against the Chargers in that playoff game, he could not make layups. And
until the fourth quarter,
challenge going forward.
Yeah, it was immensely frustrating. So it was, you know, it was just nice to see. It was a good week for the Ravens. And I got to think, you know, I would pick them going into this game really just because of the lack of talent on this Arizona team and sort of the matchups we described.
Yeah, and I think you're going to see a difference in just overall speed. You find the good defenses every year in the NFL. You'll find fast defenses. This Arizona Cardinals defense is not fast.
No, they are not. All right, well, speaking of fast, we're going to get quickly to some of your questions. But before we do, I want to take a quick second to tell you about ZipRecruiter. Hiring can be a slow process. I've got a story for you. Cafe Altura CEO Dylan Miskowitz needed to hire a director of coffee for his organic coffee company, but he was having trouble finding qualified applicants. I would not be one because I drink trash coffee. I drink like Folgers and I'm not into the prestigious stuff. But Dylan needed someone who was an expert, so he switched to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter does not depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. So you get qualified candidates fast. Dylan posted his job on ZipRecruiter and said he was impressed by how quickly he had great candidates apply. He also used ZipRecruiter's candidate rating feature to filter his applicants so he could focus on the most relevant ones. And that is how Dylan found his new director of coffee in just a few days. With results like that, it's no wonder that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Mina. That's ZipRecruiter.com/MINA. ZipRecruiter.com/Mina. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Question. Question. Lenny, for your thoughts.
As always, guys, if you leave a positive 5-star review in my iTunes page and a question, I will answer it. 5 stars only. Sorry. And please remember that my mom reads all the reviews. Daniel's going to help me answer these today. We've got some good ones. The first question is from Peter Mark Campbell, who wants to ask which five teams that made the playoffs last year won't this year. Dana, so I don't think it'll be five, but I'm going to read all the playoff teams for you and tell me who you think's at risk. Okay.
Okay. Let's go.
Okay. So we got, the Colts, Texans, Cowboys, Seahawks, Chargers, Ravens, Eagles, Bears, Chiefs, Rams, Patriots, Saints.
Okay. I'm going to say the two that I would be concerned about would be the Colts and the Bears.
Yep.
And a lot of that, with the Colts, the obvious, look, it's Andrew Luck, and that's just a drop-off. I like Jacoby Brissett. Jacoby Brissett is a good player. He's a functional starting quarterback in this league. But I thought the narrative on him got, it was like a runaway train. It was like, oh, I'm not going to skip a beat. You know, everybody believes in him. And I'm like, I'm getting ready to do this Charger game. I'm going back and watching all Andrew Luck from last year. I'm like, these are, some of these throws are like, you know, five guys in the league can make some of these throws. Like, Jacoby Brissett's a nice player. He is not Andrew Luck. That is still a tremendous drop off. That would be one. And then the Bears, I think, not even reading too much into what we saw from them and their own issues, I just think that division around them is better. I think when you look at the way the Minnesota Vikings are built right now, you look at the Green Bay Packers, obviously we saw them against the Bears, and even the Lions. I know they didn't play well in that game, but I think they're better. At least they're better than they were last year. So I'm going to say Colts and Bears would be the two that I would keep an eye on.
Well, we're going to talk about the Vikings and the Packers after the mailbag, but the only other team I guess I kind of want to ask you about is because we're not going to talk about them and your expertise is the Chargers. You know, a team that's been ravaged by injuries and probably has one of the worst offensive line situations in the NFL right now. Do you have any concerns? And by the way, they did eke out the Week 1 win over the Colts. Do you have any concerns about them?
Yeah, I mean, look, you have to have concern. You just look at all the pieces that are missing. But the encouraging thing is my personal philosophy, championship football, unless you're the New England Patriots, because I know the New England Patriot fans always get me on this. The Patriots are the exception to every rule. So put them aside, put them over to the side. For everybody else, success largely depends on your ability to play great at quarterback position and to rush the passer. And that is a spot where the Chargers are still in great hands with Phillip Rivers, Bosa, Ingram, Nwosu, that whole wave of pass rushers that they have. So they're good there. And I think that's what they can rely on to try and hold down the fort until they start getting some of these bodies back in the second half of the season. So, yeah, look, it's a concern. Left tackle is a huge concern. When you looked at that game, I thought, you know, Melvin Gordon, they're fine. As long as he wants to wait, they're going to be fine with Justin Jackson. They even have another back in Troy Maine Pope, who's pretty good. They're going to be fine there. The two guys they missed, Derwin James defensively, you saw that in some of the tackling against Marlon Mack. It wasn't great from the safety position. And then, obviously, with Russell Okung. Now, when they helped him with a tight end or a back, they were able to really make things happen. When they relied on him and soloed him up against not even, you know, special pass rushers, Kamoko Touré and company, they gave up some pressure. So that, to me, is the one that's concerning. I think the rest of the offensive line, it's more than functional. It might not be elite, but I think you've got a really good center in Pouncey. I think he takes some unfair criticism. I think Sam Tevy in the run game is really good. Pass protection is still an area. He's still learning and growing as a young player. But really, to me, it's that left tackle spot. Ken Wisenhunt and company have got to find a way to try and cover that up.
I just want to clarify, I giggled because you mentioned Troy Maine Pope, who is a Seahawks preseason obsession. Every year, there's like a player who everyone gets obsessed with, and they continue to be obsessed with him.
He's a good little player.
Don't get us going. Well, speaking of running backs, SpoderKid5563 asks, which running back will be best in 2027? Well, SpoderKid, that would be someone in high school, probably, right? Because that's 6 years out. And yeah, I mean, even like, Daniel, like 2023 is probably a college back at this point, given the way running back.
I think you're probably safe there. I think to answer his question, though, you're going to want to go to www.rivals.com,
yeah.
And that's where you will find that question.
B. Javilla, this is an interesting one. So he has a suggestion, or he or she has a suggestion for overtime, which is something we debate a lot on the show, the best way to do overtime rules, which I complain about all the time, which is that if you get home field in the playoffs, you should just get the ball first, and it's an incentive to get home field. Well, as a Chargers-affiliated person, I think one could argue that there's already too much of an advantage You know, the Chargers are a team that really has been victimized by that, I think, being in a difficult division, and a team that if you actually arranged the teams, if you broke out of conferences, would land a lot higher. But how do you feel about that suggestion?
That's interesting. What's wrong with it? I haven't heard your take on this, so I'm coming
in
the line. Maybe you hate the college version.
I like the college version.
What's wrong with college overtime?
I'm with you. Bingo. I hate the NFL rules. But this is divisive, man. Some people just hate the college rule. I think college fans hate the college rules, and NFL fans hate the NFL rules.
I love the college rule. I got to play in several overtime games in college, and some of my favorite memories are those games. And I think it's fair. I think it invokes some strategy on whether or not, you know, you want to start going for two earlier rather than later, and then they force the issue where you have to start going for two at that point in time. So I think it's the most fair way to do it. And then if you're in the NFL, if you want to put, you know, if they want to put a limit on it where you could only do, you know, three sessions, I guess, and then if they want to have a tie and don't want to play any more snaps, then I guess I get that. But that should be the framework which they should be working from.
I'm with you all the way. We're on the right side of history here. Crash Dummy, who is a Falcons.
You're going to be really passionate about your overtime.
No. I'm anti-NFL overtime, which people get all worked up. Yeah, because they're like, oh, well, if you don't want to, you know, like, stop their offense, you get a chance. This was after the Chiefs, I think. And no, because sometimes teams have good offenses and bad, whatever. I'm not getting into it. Crash Dummy asks, is a Falcons fan, and this is going to be rough after this weekend. We're not talking about the Falcons, but I asked about Dan Quinn taking over the play calling. Daniel, that defense did not look good. A lot of guys coming back from injury. I think with the Falcons, at some point, you look at this defense, though, and you have to ask not only about the coaching, but also the player selection, because they have not been able to find an outside pass rush to save their life. Now, they didn't allocate draft capital this year, which I thought was a little bit surprising, and that's a whole other conversation with the offensive line. But those picks just have not worked out.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think sometimes we can make football more complicated than it is. You get quarterbacks, you get guys that can rush quarterbacks. Like, that, to me, is where it starts, and they just don't have anybody. I like doing these games when you're broadcasting these games, and I'm sure you get a chance to look at it as well when you're doing those Rams games. Who scares you? Like, when you're looking at your board and you're like, who scares you in that front? No, I mean, Grady Jarrett's a really good player.
Yeah,
but I don't think
the God Grady Jarrett. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
That's
so,
it. It's Grady Jarrett, and that's it. No, totally. Who, by the way, was actually quite good in this game and did some nice work on the inside of that Vikings line. But yeah, it's just him. And they've spent picks there, and they have not worked out, and they haven't gone out in free agency, and yeah, I'm not feeling great about that. Steeler fan, last question. I'd like to ask this of you as well. Daniel asks, if you could only eat at one fast food restaurant the rest of your life, what would you choose? Ooh. Okay, so for
one
me...
fast food restaurant. Oh, that's easy.
The rest of your life. It's easy for you? For me, it would be Starbucks, because I end up eating there all the time when I'm on the road.
Starbucks does have underrated food, I'll give you that. And this is, I'll preface it with saying, I know what your reaction is going to be, because I'll get the same reaction every time. It would be Chick-fil-A. It would be Chick-fil-A. And the rebuttal that I'll hear is, oh, you'll get sick of eating chicken after, you know, 2 years. You'll be like, you want more variety. I'm like, I don't know. I've been eating Chick-fil-A going on since they had it in college. They had it at App State when I was there. In the dining hall or whatever. And I probably ate it 4 days a week, you know, for 3 years that I was there, and didn't get sick of it. That was starting in 1998, I guess. Here we are in 2019. I still have it a good bit. I've never got to the point where I was like, you know what, I just don't feel like Chick-fil-A today. So until I reach that point, I think I would be good. I think that would be my choice.
Did you try the Popeyes chicken sandwich?
No. Here's the thing. This is way too much information. Last year, or maybe it was 2 years ago, my wife and I ran a 5K down in San Diego, down in Coronado Island. And we're like, afterwards, we're starving. Like, we're going to get something on the way home. So it's about an hour drive. So we stopped, and we hadn't had Popeyes in probably in like 15 years. But we just pulled off at an exit we didn't know, thought there'd be a bunch of food. Turns out just a Popeyes. So we eat some Popeyes, and I've never been so sick before in my life.
No.
Like, we both totally got sick. And then I heard all this craze about the Popeyes sandwich. I'm like, no, I'm out. That was a
Can't
one
do
and
it.
Done for me on Popeyes.
I always feel like with fast food, you have to eat at a fast food place a lot to not get sick. It's like traveling to another country. Like, you have to be inured to it, you know, your stomach. But and it's not even about the quality of food.
I did not build up an immunity. I did not
build exactly.
up the proper immunity there.
You need, like, a vaccination, like a shot or something. But I haven't tried the sandwich because it's been
like,
sold out.
A shot of a biscuit and a mixture of, like, biscuit and chicken. I need to get that shot before I eat there.
The biscuits are good. The biscuits are real good. Speaking of real good, I'm really excited about this Vikings-Packers game because, as you mentioned, the NFC North is very good. Both these teams showed a lot of really exciting stuff. Well, there are things that to walk away feeling very hopeful, I think, if you're fans of both these teams. And I think it's going to be a really close game. I think this could be a really ugly game. I'm going to throw that out there before we get into sort of breaking down the matchup and the strengths and weaknesses of both sides. And the reason I think it, and when I say ugly, I think what I mean is I think this could be a bit of a slugfest because I think both of these defenses, Daniel, looked real good week one.
Oh, no doubt. They're both, we knew what Minnesota's defense was going to look like. You knew that was not going to be a repeat of last year. There's just too many good players and too good of a play designer, play caller over there with Coach Zimmer that they were going to get things turned around. The intrigue with the Vikings was on the offense. And, you go to the Green Bay Packers. Now, a lot of new faces on that defense. I thought they would be improved. I did not think they would be that dominant with their front. And I had a chance to work with Mike Pettine with the Ravens. I know how smart Mike is. I think he's a very, very underrated guy in terms of building a defense. When he has the guys, the horses up front, they're pretty darn good. So they're both great defensively. And then you flip it over offensively. Me and Bucky Brooks, my partner on our Move to Six podcast, we were joking about Kirk Cousins because we were saying, if you look at quarterbacks, we used to talk about like trucks and trailers, right? You get some quarterbacks that can kind of pull the team behind them, and then there's other quarterbacks that are trailers and need a really good team to kind of pull them. And the analogy that I had with Kirk Cousins is a little different than that, where I was like, this is like when you're riding a bike. There's three stages. There's training wheels. There's your dad holding to the back of your seat and trying to steady you as you're riding your bike, and then you're off and running by yourself. I feel like last year Kirk Cousins got to ride the bike by himself, and now I very much feel like Mike Zimmer is holding onto the back of his seat.
Oh, so wholesome. I always felt about Kirk that I usually hate this kind of stuff because I hate like quarterback wins and I hate clutch and I hate, he's good in prime time, but it feels like all that stuff applies to Kirk Cousins and it drives me crazy. Like he's the quarterback who's statistically great, but then fails in big moments and it's so frustrating. And I do think he plays better when like he just looks, he looked unbothered. He looked like he had, granted this game got out of hand so early that it's almost hard to evaluate the offense because of the game script, right? So they start off, the Vikings defense, the special teams, there's a block punt, there's a fumble, there's a pick. So, it gets out of hand, and that's how you end up with a game where Kirk Cousins only attempts 10 passes. But
he ran the
ball six
times and threw it 10 times. Is that incredible?
That's like Mike Zimmer's dream. Like, he could not, like, draw up a, like, this is like a fan fiction by Mike Zimmer of how a game would go. I guess sticking on that offensive side, again, I do think because of the game script, it's kind of hard to evaluate. And I think the Packers defense, which we'll talk about, certainly presents a much stiffer challenge for them. But you got to be encouraged by watching what you saw out of Dalvin Cook, who we all kind of knew would be absurd in Kubiak's outside zone. But to see it play out that way and then to see Madison come in and do the same thing, I mean, as a Vikings fan, you got to be pretty hyped about that.
Yeah, no, and you feel really good about your first round pick and Garrett Bradbury, whose athleticism and movement, he was built to play in this game. So, I kind of wrote down when I was watching the tape, I just wrote like Gary Kubiak plus Garrett Bradbury equals goodness. I mean, it is just a perfect blend and a perfect fit for Dalvin Cook. And I'm just glad we get to see the Florida State version that we saw, once again, because he is special. And now he's finally in the right system with some players up front. It's going to be fun. I think they've got a really, really good formula. You try and look at these teams and how they're going to do it, and they can do it a little different way. I think this is a formula that's really going to work for Minnesota, which is to really feature all that outside zone, and then you're going to see Kirk be able to work off that, and then you're going to see a defense that's playing much better. So I think they're a legitimate Super Bowl contending team. I know it's ridiculous to say that week one, I think they're going to end up winning this division, and I think they're going to be a team nobody wants to play in the postseason.
Ooh, that is, yeah, I like it. The hot takes early on that. Well, I guess, you know, you said that you think they're going to win the division, and going back to that offense, and we like, you know, you got to be happy with what you saw week one, but if you're, I guess, Minnesota, how do you attack this Packers defense? You know, I mentioned they're obviously better than the Falcons defense, and they put on such an incredible show in week one. I've been hyping them all summer, Daniel, because first of all, I thought last year they faced some unique challenges. I think they had, if not the most, close to the most injuries on defense, according to Football Outsiders' adjusted games loss stat. And they had a lot of bad luck in terms of turnovers. I'm a big Mike Pettine fan. And then they go out in free agency and they get Mr. and Mr. Smith and they get Adrian Amos, my most beloved free agency signing, and they balled out. And not only did they ball out, you know, they've got both the talent and I think the game plan. I shared a story this week by Stephen Ruiz that I like that talked about how, against Chicago, which we has a very creative and exciting offense that uses a lot of deception, they never came out of their nickel defense the entire time. Compare that to Seattle, by the way, which refused to even play nickel because they didn't have the personnel. So they refused to be exploited. And, you know, because Matt Nagy's so good using heavier packages to create mismatches, you know, getting tight ends on linebackers. And Green Bay was like, nope. Now we're good. So if you're Minnesota, you see that, and then you look at your own talent, what do you think is the game plan going into this?
Well, that's not just with Green Bay. That's, you know, I think I tweeted this out during my camp tour, but I talked to a couple defensive coordinators and basically just said, we're not going to match. We're not going to match personnel. We're going to stay in our nickel package, and they're going to try and jump us out of that. We're not going to do it. You know, make these tight ends block us in the run game. We'll take our chances. But that's something you're going to see a lot, I think, more this year as it trends in that direction. But when I look at Green Bay, the two things that jump out to me just watching their defense on tape is a couple things that they needed and they have, which is guys that can win one-on-one up front. They've got that now with the Smith brothers. And you also look on the back end, they need to just get faster. And over the last couple of years, when you bring in a Jaire Alexander and watch the way he flies around, and as you like Adrian Amos, I'm a Darnell Savage guy.
He was so good in this first game. Oh, my God.
He looked
great.
Yeah,
sorry. And so I get excited.
It is like, I feel like sometimes, again, we try and you can make things as complicated as you want. On defense, you've got to be fast. You cannot be a slow defense and be a great defense. It is impossible. And they have so much more speed and athleticism in the back end, and they've got guys that can win up front.
Yeah, I mean, that secondary looks ridiculous. Secondary they've been investing in for a long time, continue to invest in both free agency and the draft. They look absolutely ridiculous. And really, they needed to, because the Green Bay offense, and we'll end here, kind of going into this game, looked, Daniel, there was this sort of debate, I think, in week one. Oh, how much did starters not playing in the preseason affect teams? And I think it was mixed, right? Like in the Chicago game, I don't think Trubisky playing in the preseason would have resulted in a different effect personally. However, I did kind of feel like watching this Green Bay offense at times that maybe they would have benefited from, I guess, playing a bit in the preseason, because they looked kind of confused to me at times. Like they weren't even like lining up. Yeah, like I don't know how much of it to put on rustiness versus Aaron Rodgers not executing in the first half versus LaFleur's play calling.
I just thought it looked like gumbo, you know. It kind of looked like scheme gumbo, where it was a little bit of what Aaron, you know, did before and was very comfortable in, a little bit of LaFleur and what he wants to do. And I felt like it was like a wrestling match between trying to figure out what they want to do. I think their success is going to come when eventually it's, you know, and the old McCarthy haters are going to hate this, but I guarantee you this offense is going to end up morphing into more of what it was than what LaFleur necessarily, you know, wants it to be with what he does. So, like when you have a quarterback like that, you're going to end up eventually leaning towards what makes him comfortable. And him getting hit as much as he did in that game and just looking a little disjointed, I think that, you know, he's going to end up winning that power struggle, and that thing's going to end up leaning a little bit more in Aaron Rodgers' direction.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, like on the touchdown pass, there were flashes of melding play calling with what Rodgers does best, but for the most part, they were only able to get things going when he either improvised or worked outside of structure. So, you know, but again, Chicago's still a very, very good defense. Not that, well, Minnesota's really good too. So that'll be a challenge for them. I think this will be, like I said, I think it'll be a close game. And I'm really excited for it. So we're going to talk about one more game, which is, well, yeah, I'll tell you about it in a second. Before I do, I want to tell you about Upstart. As most of us have found out the hard way, getting into debt is easy. Getting out is hard, especially if your FICO score isn't great. Thankfully now there's Upstart.com, the revolutionary lending platform that lets you know you are more than just your credit score and offers smarter interest rates to help you pay off high interest credit card debt. Upstart goes beyond the traditional FICO scores when addressing your credit worthiness. They actually reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter interest rate. Upstart believes you're more than your credit score. They believe in you, and they understand that. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate in just a few minutes without affecting your credit score. And the best part, once the loan is approved, most people get their funds the very next day, the very next business day. Over 200,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards, student loans, fund their weddings, or make large purchases. Free yourself from the burden of high-interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. See why Upstart is ranked number one in their category with over 300 businesses on Trustpilot. And hurry to upstart.com/Mina to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes and it will not affect your credit. That is upstart.com/Mina. All right. So I don't want to be dramatic, but I kind of feel like whoever loses Browns Jets is done for the season. Well, okay, Daniel, before you counter me, I'm just going to point out, after this, the Browns play the Rams, Ravens, Niners, Seahawks, and Patriots. The Jets play the Patriots, Eagles, Cowboys, the Patriots again, and the Jaguars. This feels like a must win.
Oh, gosh. That's not no bueno. It's hard to argue that. I'm pulling it up right now, looking at the Jets' schedule.
Brutal.
Yeah, it's brutal. Nothing is as bad, though, as the Raiders. Have you looked at what they have coming up?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The embrace last night, Raiders fans, because good Lord.
Chiefs, Vikings, Colts, Bears, Packers, Texans. That's what's waiting the Raiders. But anyway, maybe you're right on that. Maybe this is a must-win game. I think when it's all said and done, I don't believe either one of these teams are going to be in the playoffs. Cleveland, as much hype as there was, and I still think they have a collection of talented players, and I'm a little more bullish on them on the defensive side of the ball, especially because of what they have with their pass rush, but they are not good up front, and I don't know necessarily that that's the right division to not be good up front in. I think that's going to be a major struggle for them, and I think Baker's got to be cleaner. As much pressure as they got on him, there were other times when they were clean in the pocket, and Baker had gotten a little bit sloppy with his footwork, so he's got to clean some of those things up. I think the Browns are going to take the next step, which for me is going to be a 9-7 type team that just misses the postseason. Whereas the Jets, I was optimistic that they could be a 500 team, but they just look so bad offensively. It was discouraging to watch.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the Browns first, because I want you to help me sort of divvy up the blame pie here, because all offseason everyone's been talking about this offensive line. Like, it's weird because it's never been a secret that it's a problem, and yet it was kind of always the caveat, like, oh, the Browns, their defense is so good, the pass rush is insane, Baker Mayfield, weapons, Odell, hey, the offensive line is an issue, but that caveat came to the forefront. And while I completely agree with you about Baker Mayfield and his decision making, is holding on to it too long, forcing it, running into sacks, I think it's pretty easy to see how that kind of flowed out of the offensive line, like, especially with him trying to go hero ball at the end of the game and just completely losing it. I also think, Daniel, though, you gotta put some of that on Kitchens, right? Because last season he comes in his court, setting aside the penalties and the discipline stuff, which you'd also put it on Kitchens's table. I think if you put something on someone's table, no, you put it at the footstep. So anyways, last season Kitchens comes in as offensive coordinator, and people have forgotten, before he did, Baker was getting brutalized, just brutalized in that offense. But somehow the offense, it's a combination. Last season, the offensive line, their play improves. Greg Robinson becomes a different human being, and Kitchens was able to sort of scheme him out of pressure. Did not see that yesterday. I saw like a lot of longer developing plays, and I don't know, maybe I was missing it, but it felt like he also deserves some of the blame.
Yeah, and we talked a little bit about, early talking about the Chargers and being able to help out some of your guys that are struggling. You know, I didn't think they did enough of that in this game with their backs and their tight ends to try and cover up some of that stuff. But, the other thing, look, the elephant in the room is the 18 penalties. I mean, that's ridiculous. And that goes back to, I don't know if you remember this, but when the Browns and the Colts were doing their joint practices, do you remember the stories coming out of there where it was, I have to look up the exact quote, but they had gotten like 4 or 5 fights in that. And Freddie Kitchens was quoted as saying, like, you know, we don't back down from anybody, and that's who we are. And I'm sitting here going, like, this is like the ultimate sign of an undisciplined football team. And here we go to the first week of the season. They have 18 penalties. Guys are getting kicked out of the game. I'm like, this has all been right in front of us for everybody to see. But this was going to be a problem. Great teams don't get involved in all that stuff. And I've been around, had a chance to be around some very, very physical teams and didn't fight a lot in practice. And I've been around teams that are playoff teams, and they don't get in a bunch of scuffles with other teams. They get good work in. It was just an immaturity to that bothered me.
Right.
And people thought I overreacted a little bit. But here we go. I mean, this is a team that just looked immature. And in every way you can evaluate that word, that's what it looked like.
Yeah, I think sometimes when people hear the words discipline, they get like their hackles up, and because it sounds like, you know, scolding and off the field. It's not about that. We're talking about football discipline, right? Like,
yeah.
If Odell Beckham Jr. wants to wear a $300,000 watch during a game, I don't care. Like, that doesn't affect mm-hmm. football game. What we're talking about is, players not being dialed in and losing control. Yeah. And that is a real thing.
It's totally losing your poise and your focus. That to me is discipline, and that's what impacts the team. And it's not, I don't need you to be, you know, doing your jumping jacks in perfect formation. I'm talking about not getting into post-snap penalties, which are dumb and cost your team. I'm talking about staying on sides. I'm talking about just the overall focus and discipline that if you look at the consistently good teams, they don't get caught up in that. That was something that Baker, truthfully, was put in a darn near impossible spot with as many third and forever situations as he found himself. That's not a recipe for any quarterback to be successful.
Right. And Kitchens as well. There's not really much you can do with that. I think I was really excited about this defense from a talent perspective, and I'm not panicking about them after week one just because, you know, they were also put in impossible field position and, they played fine. I thought with Taylor Lewan out and the Titans line, they would be able to tee off a little bit more on the quarterback, and they didn't. And I think Ward struggled a bit. But I think that the Browns defense, Daniel, will be fine. But this offensive line is not getting better anytime soon. And I think that's, like, even though I said it a bunch, I underestimated it, and here we are. And fortunately, I guess, I'm not super high on this Jets defense either. Although for much of this game, the last game against Buffalo, they looked pretty good, but it'll kind of went to hell when CJ Mosley went out. But the secondary is still bad.
Look, there's holes all over the place. And as good as some of those young players are up front, the secondary is not good. There's going to be opportunities down the field. The fascinating thing is just going to be Greg Williams getting a chance to get very exotic, which you know is coming against Baker in this game. So that'll be an interesting chess match. But this is a very, very incomplete roster for the Jets. I mean, when you really look at it, and the marquee positions in today's NFL, especially on the defensive side of the ball, edge rushers, corners, there's some work to do.
Not a lot there. Thank you so much for reminding me that this is the Greg Williams revenge game. I'm obsessed with revenge games. Like, I called the Adrian Amos revenge game, and we saw how that ended up. So, and Greg Williams getting revenge on the Browns feels, you know, Kitchens got the job. He's going to, you know, it's a ripe storyline. I enjoy it.
The million-dollar question, Mina, does he dye the goatee for this one?
Oh, God. Whew. I mean, listen, if there was ever a moment.
When he does that.
It's a rough look. I know people always give Antonio Brown crap for the blonde mustache. The Greg Williams goatee is way more offensive to me.
Ooh.
But yeah, I didn't think this Jets team was a playoff team or anything like that, but I'm a proud charter member of the Sam Darnold Hive, and I was really bummed. Really bummed after Sunday. Bummed because of what I saw both from Darnold and Gase, Daniel, because I don't know. He looks so good in the, I mean, look, I won't talk, we know Sam Darnold, great at the end of last year. I think he's got the tools, sometimes bad decisions, but he looks so good in the preseason and you're hearing all this stuff. Oh, Gase is going to do exciting things. And it was just so boring and ugly. Mm-hmm. And I get going through Le'Veon Bell, but. I don't know. It was this is some real hard hitting analysis. I just didn't, like, this offense averaged 3.4 yards per play, and converted 41% of their third down attempts. I mean, they were outscored by their defense. Like, I don't know. I just was not excited after this first game.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's work to do up front, but I thought it was, you know, at some point in time, it was just too conservative. Like, that's, you've got to try and take more shots. Now, Sam missed a couple of them with Robbie Anderson, but I did not get a sense at all that they ever entered into attack mode. It was just very, very, very conservative, and kind of, like, for lack of a better word, a little scared, kind of the way they play the game. Now, I don't want to take anything away from the Bills. It's a great defense that nobody talks about, and they're going to give a lot of people issues. But, man, I just hate to leave a game and just go, man, we didn't really even – try anything on these guys. Like, it was just so conservative, and that's got to change. You know, hopefully they recognize that going forward. And look, Sam, if you're the president of the club, I'm at least the treasurer, probably the vice president, and he's got to play better. You know, he's got to play better.
Right. Yeah, that's what, it's equal parts, like, blame, because he did, listen, I've been watching Sam since college, and it's so frustrating because I think his highs are so high, and he's not, you know, he's not that high variance. Like, he's never a disaster, but there's some games where his footwork just gets off and he starts making bad decisions. And with Gase, and that I think you can turn around. My concern with this is just with Gase, Daniel, you saw this in Miami, like the conservatism, just like calling throws short of the sticks and not testing defenses. And I'm with you on the, I love this Bills secondary. We talk about him on the Mina Kimes show, but, I just worry. I just worry about Gase, like, kind of curling up and not making the most out of Sam.
Yeah, I mean, I did feel good about this because everybody kind of asked me, as I'm sure you do, you get a million people that stop you and go, fantasy football question, like, who do I draft or who's a name? And I did say, like, Crowder is going to catch 100 balls, and I think he might get those 100 balls before we get to the halfway point of the season. But hopefully they can try and stretch the field a little bit more than they did in this one.
And Sam has
didn't have a catch over 20 yards. Didn't have a passing play over 20 yards.
I feel like I drafted Robbie Anderson high in one of my leagues, and I feel like an idiot because I knew. Yeah, I knew it, and I knew it was a mistake. But well, on that note, I'm gonna as I talk about how terrible I am about fantasy football, before we get to the final segment, I'm gonna tell you about DraftKings. Week one is in the books, but DraftKings isn't finished celebrating with some huge fantasy football contests. Don't be like me. Don't take Robbie Anderson really high. For week two of the football season, DraftKings, the leader in one day fantasy football, is giving New Year's a free shot at over $1.5 million in prizes with your first deposit when you put in code MINA during sign up. Draft your lineup, feel the sweat like never before. Every run, throw, and catch means more with the DraftKings lineup on the line. It is simple. Just draft your lineup, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against competition. Plus, all the new and exciting users can get a deposit bonus up to $500. That's some extra cash to play with this football season. Nothing adds to the sweat of watching the game quite like having a shot at over $1.5 million in prizes. Download the DraftKings app now and use the code MINA. For a limited time, both new and existing users can get a deposit bonus of up to $500. New users, don't forget to enter my code MINA to get a free shot at over $1.5 million in prizes with your first deposit. That's code MINA, only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Deposit bonus requires a 25 times playthrough. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
MINA, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
I want to know if I'm the only person that does this, but doing podcast reads, or even more so, doing the Charger games, I get to do the without the express written permission of the National Football League read, right? And it's always in the last 2 minutes of the game, so I've got to read, like, super fast to make sure that I don't, you know, run into money. And I give myself, if I look at it like I'm pitching a perfect game, like if I can get through the read without stumbling. Like, there's like this, like a George W. Bush type smile that comes over my face. Like, I'm so proud of myself. that I made it through. And it's not a conversation you have with anybody else. But when you finish that read, I find myself giving myself a letter grade on how I did on my read. Am I crazy? Am I
nailing,
the only person that says that?
Nailing a read in one shot, that is my, you know, 50-yard pass. That's the closest thing I get to it. Absolutely. I do read them pretty fast, I know. But you got to ask me a question. Now I'm going to ask you some questions.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
Okay, Daniel. Four questions from me. One question from my dog, Lenny. I'm not responsible for the content of his questions. So please, I apologize in advance. My first question, could this Dolphins team be the worst team in NFL history?
I think it's got a chance to be the worst offensive line that I've seen since I started scouting in 2003. The defense, I thought the personnel was not horrible, but they looked horrible in that game. So, early returns, yes. I think it's got a chance to be a historically bad football team.
Who's playing them this week? I mean, every team they play.
The Patriots. Are they any good?
Oh, my God. I forgot. Oh, no. Oh, the Patriots schedule. So whatever. It's not so unfair. Question two. I had yesterday a Starbucks. I should get sponsored by Starbucks. A Starbucks tomato mozzarella sandwich. And it got me thinking, is a calzone a sandwich?
No, it's not a sandwich. No, it's
what makes it not a sandwich.
I think the fact that you need a fork, right?
You don't need a fork to eat a calzone.
If you're like a normal human being, like I think you're an animal.
Wow.
You just scoop that thing up and like the big like meatballs.
Yeah, like a burrito.
In that thing.
That's an interesting. So if you need a fork to eat something, it can't be a sandwich.
Yeah, but a burrito.
What about like an open face sandwich?
But that's a whole different classification. I think you're either a true sandwich or you're not. And I'm not putting calzone in that category.
Okay, that's fine. Question three. The Seahawks quarterback is Russell Wilson, one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. Sunday, they threw 20 times. Do you think they are actually trying to ruin my life?
I think Kirk Cousins is jealous. Twice throws is Kirk Cousins.
Seven of those throws were to running back Chris Carson.
Yeah, my little thing on Russell is just once he got the money, was like, is if you're writing that check, which unfortunately after Mr. Allen passed away, I'm not sure how that is all structured over there right now. But I would be tempted to walk down the hallway and be like, hold on, we are paying him this. Shouldn't we not ask him to do a little more? Obviously, we believe he can do more. He's one of the best in the NFL. Let's cut him loose a little bit. But it does not happen. It does not change, and I don't know that it ever will.
Mm. So I take it then your answer is yes, they're personally trying to ruin my life.
Yeah, I think that's probably accurate.
Yeah, seems fair. Question four, do you prefer to watch football with other people or by yourself?
Oh, by myself.
Me too.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's the right answer.
And especially with my to my son's games, like I'm the dad that's like on the fence, like away from everybody. Cause I don't want to talk to anybody.
The worst is like working in football. People are like, oh, you must be so fun to watch with. What are you doing this Sunday? Can we come watch with you? And I'm like, no, worst nightmare.
I would say I don't watch it alone. I watch it with Twitter open, right? With either your phone or your laptop. That's the experience right there.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, last question, as always, is from Lenny. Like I said, not responsible for what you get from him. Lenny wants to know. So I told him that you do color commentary on the radio for the Chargers here in Los Angeles. And his question was, Daniel, do you ever get recognized on the street by any of the 10 fans?
Lenny. two parts, Lenny. No, I do not. First of all, it's radio, not television. So there's no, that's not happening.
It's a great point. Wow. Touché.
The second part is, how do I say this the right way here? Significantly more than 10, Lenny, okay? Significantly. I'm not putting a number on it. I'm just going to use the word significantly more than 10. And I think people are going to be pleasantly surprised when the new stadium opens. I think they anticipate there's going to be a limited number of Charger fans. I think there's more out there than Lenny realizes.
Follow-up question by Lenny. Does significantly more mean it's 15?